Welcome to the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today, what we're going to do is Tony and I are going to discuss how we create our content for our blog. And at least for Tony, there's a very specific process that she has in place. So in that case, I think I'm going to let you start with this one, Tony.
You're going to let me start? I don't have a specific process. Are you joking?
But you do, because you have your content calendar planned out for like the next month, don't you?
So I used to do a content calendar for the month. I actually started doing it for the year.
For the year?
Yeah.
Good Lord. Okay.
Okay, but so what I used to do is I used to have a content calendar that was weekly. And if anyone follows Pat Flynn, it's kind of based on the one that he gave out several years ago, where you basically, because I usually try to put up a new post every week. Uh-huh. And so the content was based on weekly, you know, every Wednesday, something new went up. But what I realized was that sometimes for me, I don't have new content to put up every week, because a lot of my content is reworking old content because I am still in the middle of my giant content audit. So a lot of times what I'm doing is taking old posts and rewriting them and reworking them, making them longer, combining two posts, things like that. So the weekly content calendar didn't work as well for me. So what I switched to was basically monthly, where I wanted to make sure I covered monthly themes that were popular based on certain times of year. And getting that data from Google Analytics, from my own content, and then getting that data from tools like Pinterest Trends and things like that.
But you plan out the content for the year?
I plan out themes for the year. So that's how that's my high level. So okay. For example, in January, I'm always going to write about two things. I'm going to write about health and I'm going to write about money every January. So now it's going to look different year by year, right? I might not, you know, it's not going to be the same thing, but I know that for me, those two things get a lot of traffic in January anyway. All my old content gets a lot of traffic for those topics in January. So I want to continue to write on those themes because I know they'll do well.
So would you say that a lot of your stuff is time sensitive?
I would say most of my stuff is time sensitive. And it's funny because if you would have asked me that question 2 years ago, I would have said, no, I write evergreen content, which I do write evergreen content because I'm not writing about, you know, fitness trends of 2021, right? I'm writing about overall health and fitness. But I will say that different topics are popular on my site at different times of the year, so I have to follow that seasonal calendar.
Interesting. But this is what I mean by you plan out a lot more. For me, I pretty much decide like the day before what I'm going to write about for that week.
So it's so funny because I'm probably going to do a lesson on this in the course. And because you did a lesson and it was so well received and everyone really got a lot out of it. And then they said, we want to see Tony's. And I said, you know, I'm thinking to myself, mine is so different than yours. And I don't have the ability usually to do something the day before because most of my content involves creating something first. Whether it's a recipe, a craft, a DIY project. For example, a post that's probably going to go live on my site tomorrow was a dresser, a refinished dresser. Mm. And the project itself took me a week to do. The dresser took me a week. So there's no possible way that I could say on a Sunday, I think I'm going to write a post on how to refinish this dresser that's sitting in my garage for Tuesday. Because the project itself took a week, let alone all the after work, right?
Does that imply that you have a pipeline of material just ready to go?
I do. Right now, I do have a pipeline of material. And that's only because it's because I moved into a house last year. So I documented everything I did and not everything got published right away. So that's part of it. Mm-hmm. And then two, basically any project that I do, I try to document. And sometimes it's not the right time to publish it.
So I guess for me, I have some things that obviously take a while too. So whenever I do a case study with a company or a service, I mean, that usually takes 6 to 8 months just to gather the data. But I kind of have it like tucked away somewhere. So when I'm ready to write the post. So yeah, I guess I do some planning too. I'm going to pat myself
on the back. Look at you, little planner. I'm going to get you a notebook.
But for the most part, for my evergreen tutorial posts,
right,
I determine that like the day of. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to sit down and pump this one out.
I would love to be able to do that, honestly, because like this dresser post, I was thinking about this just in terms of writing this lesson, and I thought, okay, the dresser itself took me about a week. Obviously it's not like a 40-hour project, but between, you know, the time I started and the time I finished, it was about a week-long project because paint has to dry, all that sort of thing, right? And then I had, you know, there's moving it and waiting for people to help me and stuff like that. But then the process of writing the post and editing all the photos took me another 2 days.
Wow.
And because I had 60 photos, which I wasn't going to use them all because it's a tutorial of how to do, you know, how to do something.
There's not as much text in those posts though, right?
So this one actually does have a decent amount of text because it was such a big project. But typically, like for a recipe, something like that, there's definitely not as much text. But the photo editing to me, and see, for me, like I would much rather write 1,000 words than edit 20 photos.
I would much rather edit 20 photos. Are you kidding me?
We're in the wrong. We got to swap.
Why is editing a photo that much work?
Because if I'm just going to write, I'm just going to sit down and I can just word vomit. And it's I'm fast. But if I'm editing photos,
okay.
If I'm editing photos, it's like, I look at that photo. I was like, okay, that's a good photo. And then I get it into like Canva where I'm editing it. And I think, oh, actually, that's not the right photo that I wanted. And it doesn't exactly show this one thing that I'm describing. So now I got to go back and find the next photo. And when I'm dumping the photos in, you know, when I'm just uploading them, I put them all in Google Drive. They're not, they're labeled like, you know, IMG 6524, right? So it's not like there's any way to tell, like, where's that photo of the broken corner cabinet that I need to, like, I have to weed through 60 photos to find the photo that I'm looking for that I need to edit. Because I don't use all those 60 photos in the post, obviously.
I guess our process is completely different. I actually dislike the writing. It takes me forever. And photos aren't really a big part of my thing anyways. But the screenshots that I do get, I can do in like 5 seconds, really. I just take a screen grab. I have Photoshop open. I crop it and I just put it on. That's it. Done.
You're like 15 seconds later.
Exactly.
I'm done. But to go back to like what we were talking about initially with the year-long planning, I'll just sort of overview why I do that. So one, it's because of the seasonality of my site, knowing what's popular. And then two, I'm not super prepared to have this conversation with you, but I actually have giant, you know, those giant flip boards you can get at Office Max or Staples or wherever.
Yeah.
So basically I'll take that at the beginning of the year or like in December and I'll write, you know, January, February, March, and like 3 months go on a giant page. And then I'll take post-it notes and I will write on like different color post-it notes, like post ideas. So what can we write about in January? Obviously like my standard stuff, no sugar, getting fit, you know, but it might be something like getting fit if you have kids or getting fit without equipment, things like that. And then I will also write like, hey, what's some sort of affiliate program I can promote with this topic. So if I'm talking about getting fit, then I'm going to talk about probably promoting things like the TRX or promoting things like my friend Kelly's Adore Your Wardrobe course, because once you get fit, you'll probably want to change how you dress. So I then write down affiliate ideas, and then I write down like any sort of product ideas that I would have. So not necessarily physical product ideas, but oh, hey, I could do an ebook, or hey, I could, you know, do some sort of like PDF download. So on that giant chart, I basically throw in ideas of what I can talk about to make money either through my own stuff, through affiliates. And then I also will add, if I know that I have other posts, I will write down, and I won't write down the URL or anything, but if I know that I have like 3 other posts, then I'll just kind of make myself notes. And so then I can work off this like giant flip board. And if I know that, I think this was, we did this a couple years ago where I knew that I wanted to create something, which I ended up not doing, but I wanted to do a journal, which is actually done. I just need to get it on Amazon. I created a whole journal in advance that I wanted to have out for like the beginning of the school year. So if I do all that in advance, then I can start working on things that take a little bit longer. Because obviously, if you're going to create some sort of like digital product or membership or course or something like that, or even if it's a small course, not like a full-blown course like we have, but you know, if it's like a $27 video only kind of thing, you know, you want to know that ahead of time to be working on it. So that's my reason for doing stuff like a year out. It's just so I have the seasonality, can be thinking of other pieces of content that I already have, and then be thinking of ways to make money from it.
So it sounds like when you plan a piece of content, you're also planning the monetization ahead of time.
Yeah.
Interesting. So my way of creating content is a lot different. It just depends on what I happen to be working on with my store or just some topic that just kind of popped into my head. And so there's very little planning. Sometimes there's no affiliate product related to it because with my blog, the goal is ultimately to get someone on my email list.
Right.
Where I can eventually sell them a course.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, actually. I did forget about that as I try to think of lead magnets as well.
You're just a lot more thorough than I am, I guess.
You know, we started doing this at a mastermind, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. And it worked for me. It made sense to me. All that to say, like, for example, as you know, a couple weeks ago, I made a cheesecake for the first time. And since then, I made a second one and I've been tweaking the recipe. And so I'm going to probably put a cheesecake recipe on my site in the next couple of weeks only because I keep making them and I've, you know, found my own recipe for it at this point. And so to me, it's like kind of wasted if I don't use that content. Mm-hmm. And that's not related to anything, right? Like,
and there's no affiliates for that, right?
I mean, not real. I mean, like, sure, you can link to like the pan, right, on Amazon, but there's no right. true affiliate play. Yeah.
Right. But then I would imagine you'd have like a lead magnet to get the recipe in PDF format or something like that, right?
No, they can just click and print. That's pretty standard on the food blog stuff.
Oh, is it? Most people, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, it's one of those things where it just is a traffic driver. So maybe they go to that post and they end up clicking around, or, you know, I have ad network on my site, obviously. So mm-hmm. not everything, kind of like you sometimes do fluff pieces that aren't an SEO play.
Right.
You know, for me, I mean, recipes are a staple of my site. People come to my site for recipes. So I can't, even though they're pretty hard to monetize as far as affiliates or products, they're a staple. I can't not do them. People expect it.
So people find them through search or Pinterest, probably?
Pinterest and search.
Yeah. Okay. So assuming that you know what to write,
yeah.
I'm kind of curious what your process is. I'll share mine real quick.
Okay.
I know when I want to write about something, the very first thing that I do is I perform keyword research on it just to see if there's any keywords that I can rank for. And then I probably spend like a good 30 minutes working on the headline.
Yep.
There's a number of tools that I use. There's this one called Co-Schedule Headline Analyzer, which kind of rates the headline based on like the words, how clickable it is, and that sort of thing. It gives you a rating from 0 to 100. There's also all of these headline tools out there where you kind of enter in a topic and it gives you a bunch of permutations. You've tried this one. You didn't really like it, right?
I actually have been using it for the podcast headlines, though.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Well, no, not that one. I've been using Share Through. Is it Share Through?
Oh, okay. I'll have to check that one out. I
think you recommended it.
Oh, did I? Okay.
I might be quoting it wrong. I can't pull it up right now, but I will. I'll link to it in the show notes.
Usually, what I do, what I've been doing lately, is I go to BuzzFeed.com or I go to Cosmo. Mm-hmm. Cosmo. That's a great, there's a great magazine right there.
Yeah, that's your favorite site.
Every headline they use on there is very clickable.
Yes. After you get your dating tips, you get your headline.
Well, I just replace the dating tips with like search engine optimization or conversion optimization.
So instead of 10 ways to make your man fall madly in love with you, you're like 10 ways to fall madly in love with Shopify.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And usually what I'll do is I'll write down at least 5. Most of the time I'll come up with 10 and then I'll narrow it down to like 3 or 4 and then I'll email you actually.
Yes.
For your opinion.
And you'll say, pick one.
Pick one. Yeah.
I feel a lot of pressure actually.
Well, I just did that to you recently, right?
And yeah, you
picked
did.
One. So that's the one I used for the podcast, I think. Actually, that just
good.
Went out today.
Good. Yeah. Nice.
I know for me, my stuff is very SEO focused. Do you do the same thing?
So it's funny because I do not do that at all.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. I don't disregard SEO at all. I mean, there's definitely times where I think, oh, I find something where I can probably rank for it. But in my space, like, I'm probably never going to rank for cheesecake recipe. Now, I could possibly rank for peanut butter pumpkin cheesecake recipe, something very obscure, mm-hmm. right, where it's more long tail. But I'm never going to beat out all recipes for just straight up cheesecake recipe or some of the really huge food sites. And I know that. So, you know, I always go to like Ahrefs and do a search because I want to see who is ranking, because sometimes occasionally I'm surprised, right, where it's like, wow, nobody's actually ranking. You know, there's no big sites that are ranking for this, or, you know, there seems to be an opportunity. So I always look and I always do and actually I think I learned this from you, where I'll click on the first couple sites that rank just to see how long their article is, what the angle is that they're writing about, just get an idea of what's out there. But typically my stuff is not quite as SEO friendly, right? Like the recipes are, but other things like this furniture post that's going to go up on my site, it's, you know, how to paint a mid-century modern dresser. Well, I mean, not that that's not search friendly, but that's not like, you know, for me, it's not going to be a search play. So what I do is and usually I spend under 10 minutes doing this, where I'll just look, see what's out there, see who's, you know, is it like, do I even have a shot at competing? And most of the time I don't. And then what I do is I go to Pinterest and I search like whatever I think the title should be based on like what I've seen on Ahrefs or what I'm writing about. I will dump that title right into Pinterest. So how to refinish a mid-century modern dresser, something like that, or take a mid-century modern dresser from mid-century to modern, whatever. And I see what comes up. And that's where I really start to like dig in to what's out there, because not only do I get an idea of like how thorough the posts out there already are, I also get an idea of, you know, how should I title this? Because maybe my title is totally off. And then also, you know, what how many images are people using? What do their images look like? What are the angles of those things? The hard part of that is I've already taken most of my photos, so I can't really change that, but I can change all my after photos, right? I can't change any of my before photos. Before photos are pretty similar no matter what, but all my after photos, sometimes I'll reshoot some of those based on the trends. So like a lot of, like right now the trend is when you take a picture of a dresser, for example, there's usually like a mirror hung above it. There's usually some sort of thing on the dresser. You're not just really focusing on the dresser anymore. You're focusing on like the look. So I went and reshot some of my dresser photos to like put stuff on the dresser, even though there's normally nothing on it in my house. So I typically use Pinterest to get ideas for basically how I want to structure everything in the post.
Interesting. So you use Pinterest for the content, not necessarily the headline.
Yeah. But I do, like, occasionally I'll dump something in there and nothing comes up. And so to me, that's telling me I'm off on my headline. Like, people aren't searching. Because if really nothing comes up, then people probably aren't searching for it because it's not out there already.
Is Pinterest search similar to Google search? Like, have you ever had one and not the other? Or like a something was good?
Well, you know, there's no way to check volume on Pinterest for keywords. So there's no way to really tell that. But I have seen things that make sense on Google that don't make sense on Pinterest.
Can you give an example? I'm just curious.
Not off the top of my head. Okay. I'm sure I can by the end.
So just because something is good in terms of Google land might not make it good to Pinterest. And so if you ever had to choose, would you choose Pinterest?
I would choose Pinterest.
Why?
It's easier for me to rank on Pinterest than it is in Google.
Interesting. So that cheesecake recipe, you said if no one's going to be able to find it on Google land, but people might be able to find it in Pinterest land?
Yeah, because I can, not, it's not artificial, but I can get a pin going, right? Like I can get a pin started and get it in people's feeds. And then it's a matter of people repinning it. Now, I will say with something like cheesecake, you know, that's going to be tough everywhere because that's such a popular, I mean, like just generic cheesecake. So the key with that one is, okay, is it going to be a low-cal cheesecake? Is it going to be a faster cheesecake? Is it going to be a no whatever cheesecake? Like what angle can I take with the cheesecake that... The important thing is I got to find the angle with the cheesecake that's probably not quite as popular, and then it will be easier for me to rank. And then it would be easier for me to rank in Google too, right? So it doesn't mean that I won't rank in Google. It just means that that's not my primary.
So it's based on this. It sounds like the old days of Dig, where if you had a strong account, you could get something going. Is that kind of how your Pinterest account is like?
Yeah.
But it still has to have some legs, right? Like the image has to be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it has to be enticing for someone to actually want to click on it.
Yeah. Right? Well, and that's the big thing that is important for me is I want to see the most popular pins about a topic that I'm writing about. I want to see what they look like. What kind of fonts are they using? How are they angling the photo? Are they using a collage? Are they using one giant photo? Is the text in the middle? Like one of the things I noticed people were doing recently on Pinterest, which I think I mentioned this in another podcast actually, is they were putting the stars on the image. Like it was a 5-star recipe.
Ah.
But it's not a 5-star. I mean, like, it's who knows if it's a 5-star recipe, right? Because they're not saying that. But the thing is that it appears when you look at that pin that it's been rated 5 stars, even though they're not misleading you. They're not saying that it is. But what that conjures up in your mind is that recipe is better. And I've seen a couple pins do this, and they're always like coming up first in search. And I'm like, this is definitely getting, these pins are getting more clicks. They're getting more attention because these stars are giving the impression that it's a rating system when it's really not. It's just a graphic on the image.
So would it help to put something like, this is the top recipe in like wherever you live?
So, the Georgia's best cheesecake.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure about that. I have found that if you find something that is working and you do something similar, that will work as well. One of the things that I found that's working right now, which is kind of strange, and of course, this is something that might not be working in the future, so I'm not saying to go do this, but like if you personalize the recipe. So things that I've seen working lately are like Auntie Anne's best cheesecake ever.
Grandma,
right? Like
Tony's best cheesecake
ever. Right. Like if you, so I actually created a pen for our friend Laurie, and it was her Aunt Margaret's apple pie or something. I don't remember what it was. But instead of just calling it like easy skillet apple pie or whatever, I wrote Auntie Margaret's secret apple pie recipe, right? And that pen is doing well. And it's no different than the other pens that she has that are equally as pretty, but for some reason people relate like, oh, this isn't just the recipe that you got out of the All Recipes cookbook. This is your Aunt Margaret's recipe. So currently I'm noticing that like personalizing that, like recipes in general or specifically are doing better, you know.
Okay.
Who knows?
It seems like our content creation process is a little bit different. Like you spend a lot of time on crafting the pin and the hook.
Yeah.
Does the content have to be super amazing then also? Like once someone
No, it? I put out garbage. It's
not
just
not what I was
I
implying.
Just
if you noticed, I used
yeah,
phrased
I know.
It differently. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where you and I differ the most, right? Is that you spend a lot of time writing the content. And for me, I spend the least amount of time writing the content because there's not a lot of writing. It's more editing.
Or photo quality.
Photo quality.
Right.
I think that I would say we probably spend equal amounts of time in total. But for me, the project itself, learning how to make a cheesecake is going to take me a lot longer than writing about how I made a cheesecake.
Right. That makes sense. Whereas for me, like when I write the post, it's usually on some dry topic.
Yeah.
Like drop shipping or SEO or something like that. And so my first I actually spend a lot of time on my first paragraph that basically tells people what they're going to get. Because in Google land, like time on site matters, like whether they've read your entire article and how long they stay in your article. And so you kind of have to craft that first paragraph to entice them to want to read more. And then you kind of have to just get them to try to read the entire article or stay in that post as long as possible. Is that a factor at all for like Pinterest, for example?
Typically, since most of my stuff is a tutorial, they're going to read through the tutorial no matter what my first paragraph says. I do try to make my first paragraph enticing. Your first paragraphs are amazing. I only know this because I copy them for Pinterest for you.
I mean, they're not amazing, but it just tells you what you're going to get, right?
Well, they're very SEO friendly.
Right.
When it comes to that. Mine are average, I would say. They're good enough. They're fine. They're not great because it's just really hard to write an SEO-friendly paragraph on furniture refinishing.
I guess you just have to know what keyword you're going for.
Yeah. And so for me, it's not necessarily about the first paragraph. I spend like as soon as I know what I'm doing, I did the project. Now I'm going to write it. So let's just say we'll talk about my cheesecake because I'm probably going to do that in the next couple weeks.
Okay.
So I've already made the recipe 18 times. I've taken my photos. I have all that stuff. I'm going to just sit there and dump everything in a post. Just not even think about anything, kind of like you do. I don't think about grammar. I don't think about punctuation. And I get all the directions in there. I don't put any photos in, nothing. I just get everything. And then, of course, I use a recipe plugin to do that, obviously, where you put in your ingredients and measurements, which is a little bit different. But I get all of that in there. And then I walk away from my computer or I walk away from that project.
I do the same thing. I call it the vomit phase. I'm still, it's really hard to just not go back and correct things. Do you correct spelling errors and punctuation mistakes in this beginning?
I don't make a ton of spelling errors and punctuation. I don't make very many punctuation at all. No, I make way more spelling errors than I do punctuation. Okay. But as you know, I love punctuation.
Yes. You're always on my case, actually, for my
I
slides.
Am. So I'm pretty good about just dumping it and walking away. And then I'm done for like at least a day. Like that furniture post sat there for a week before I touched it again.
Wow. Okay. So that implies then that your content creation process is always longer than like a day or two.
I mean, so it was a week just because of circumstances and I got sick and stuff too. So it was part of that was that, but I'll sit on it for a couple days. I don't go back to it the next day always.
Sometimes I revisit mine the same day if I got some exercise.
Yeah.
Because it clears my mind. But yeah, I agree. I don't look at it. Because if you try to edit it immediately after, it's still fresh in your mind and you're going to have these inherent biases. You
know? Yeah, and I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but I find too that once you've been writing something and you've made a mistake, and sometimes you make the same mistake over and over again in the writing, if you go right back to edit it, you won't catch the mistake because you basically ingrained the mistake in your head as right.
Yeah, and that then, happens to me all the time.
Yeah, but if you go back the next day, it's like a glaring error.
You know, this is just an aside, but ever since I turned 40, like when I write now, like sometimes I'll read the sentence back and it's like completely wrong. Like I'll use homonyms for word. Like maybe my mind's going now. So that's why I have to proofread my stuff like multiple times.
I find that for me, I definitely do that as well. But my bigger issue is that when I'm writing the first time, I will write. And while I'm writing, I change how I want to write the sentence. And I never go back and delete like the three or four words that went with the first sentence that I thought about. So the sentence won't make any sense at all because it will start out one way and I finish it a totally different way because there's like six extra words in there that don't belong. And that's what I found is the thing that I do the most is that as I'm writing, I sort of flip in my head of what I want to say, mm-hmm. but then I never go back and delete it. So then sometimes I'm reading it and I'm like, I don't even know what I wanted to say. Like it makes so little sense. So I found that I do that more often. And then I do a lot of, I don't know. Do you use the Yoast plugin?
I do, but I don't think it's as accurate anymore. Well, which part of the Yoast plugin are you referring to?
So, you know, they have that like writing checklist where it'll tell you many sentences you use that start with the same word
how many passive. The grammar check, basically, right?
Yeah. So I do use that for every post. And I find that I write in the first person and I'm always telling you what I'm doing. So I start a lot of sentences with I, then I, and I, you know, I. So I always have that issue where it's like, you have six consecutive sentences that start with the, so I always go back and fix those. And then my biggest problem is I write in the passive tense all the time. And you know, it tells you like how much percentage of your post. And I don't know if that matters. I think it reads better if you're not writing in the passive tense, like as just a consumer of content. I think that's important to not write in the passive if you can. But, that, and then the other one that I'm guilty of, if it's not a recipe, is, you know, they want you to have like the heading tag and then, you know, a minute, not 1,000 words till your next heading tag.
Oh, interesting. And I don't actually obey any of those rules. I just write like how I talk.
Well, I actually think those are very helpful because what they do is if you're using H2 tags or H3 tags to break up your content, which is what we recommend, a lot of times for me, I get very long-winded in a certain section of a post, especially when it's something that I struggled with. So this dresser post that I wrote, when I went to put the hardware on, I had to drill all new holes for the hardware. And I made a template, but the template I made out of parchment paper because I didn't have any cardboard. And I'm like telling the story of like why I did it a certain way. And that section is like 500 words of just me on and on and on about templates. Right, which is not the best.
But is like, it riveting?
Well, it's absolutely riveting. Me cutting parchment paper, yeah, come on. And how the fan was blowing in my bathroom, and then I was getting high off the fumes from the lacquer. I mean, you know, just like I went on and on and on about my situation, which it's mildly entertaining, but I'm also like at some point I need to like cut it off and like put another heading tag and break it up so people will read it because people aren't going to read it. So I think that's helpful in that way, especially if you tend to be long-winded. Those reminders from Yoast to me, I think, are beneficial because they just sort of keep you on focus.
I think for me, one thing that I always have to force myself to do is to insert these little lines that I call like open loop questions to get people to, I'll use like, here's the thing. And that way, you know, once you read that sentence, you want to hear what the thing is, right? Or here's the kicker. Or I'll ask a question like, is this something that sounds interesting to you? Or before we get into it, let's start with this.
Yeah.
So I try to sprinkle those in between each section or H2 section to get people.
Yeah.
But that's not like how I normally write. It's something I actually have to consciously make.
Yeah. So I do use the Yoast plugin to help me, to help my writing, I think. Not necessarily because I'm trying to follow a bunch of like SEO rules. It's more of, I think if you follow a lot of those guidelines, your article is just better.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people make that passive voice mistake. Like I do it all the time. I don't even think about it because it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to think about that and write about it.
You know what's the hardest part though is when they like highlight it for you and then you're looking at the sentence and you have no idea how to rewrite it where it's not like I'll rewrite it and I still get it highlighted and I'm like, wait, no, I did. That's right though. Like that's not passive. And then I'm like, maybe I don't know what passive is. Maybe I don't know. I got to go look it up again. Like, why am I still looking this up?
I wonder if those rules matter more for like creative writing. I can totally see that. I think when you're teaching something, and maybe I'm just making an excuse for myself here, but when you're teaching with something, I just want to try to use the simplest language possible.
Well, that's how I feel with DIY stuff. Like I want to just show you, this is how you create a template to put in a handle. Like that's not creative, right? That's just.
Yeah. Yeah. So that passive active voice thing, and maybe someone listening to this is probably going to disagree, but I think the passive.
The grammar nerds.
Yeah.
Going to come after
the
us.
Action vivid verbs are more important when you're telling a story.
I do agree with that for sure.
But you should, I mean, I'm sure it's better regardless.
That's my process. So, you know, after I come back to the post, you know, in a couple days, a day, it's always a day. I never come back the same day. I sort of go through the checklist. I go through, try to find any, you know, obviously spelling errors, punctuation. And then I do the photos.
When I come back to it, I usually end up chopping out like 25-30% of the post.
I'm usually adding I'm usually adding because, well, especially if it's a recipe, like I need to, like I can't hit 300 words sometimes.
Really? Okay.
Well, I mean, even how much can one person? Yeah, because I mean, because like if it's, especially if it's a recipe, like how much can one person say about a casserole?
True. I guess my stuff's more vomitable.
Right. To me, the vomiting is just getting the content out there. And sometimes it is long, but a lot of times, especially if it's a recipe, I'm always coming back and adding. And it's usually after the recipe because I find it super annoying when I, and actually because I've made a couple new recipes that I've found on the internet, it's like, I don't want to scroll on my phone for 4.5 minutes to get to the recipe, which is what happens. And I don't know, you probably don't make a ton of recipes off the internet, but anyone who does knows this is like a huge problem. And I actually have a feature on my site where it says jump to the recipe at the top of the post. So you can literally click this little button and it takes you right to the recipe and you can skip all the SEO BS basically. But so for me, I don't want to write 16 paragraphs before you get to the recipe. Because on mobile, that is a horrific experience.
That completely makes sense. I guess for my stuff, it's usually a lot more explanation required. There's no like one place where you can just jump to get the goods.
Yeah. So what I'll do is I'll tend to add content after the recipe plugin. So there'll be two paragraphs, you know, basically like, hey, I wanted to figure out how to make cheesecake. You know, I buy it at Costco all the time and it's expensive. So I wanted to see if I could make it myself for less. You know, some little tiny backstory about cheesecake. And then this is probably how I'll write it. And then I'll put the cheesecake recipe in. And then after that, I'll start putting things like, here's a big tip. If you don't let all your ingredients get to room temperature, you're going to have lumps in your cheesecake. It's going to probably crack while baking. I highly recommend baking it in a water bath. This is why. And I'll add more of that detail after the post. Because people who are legit wanting to make that recipe are going to read through that for the tips. But if people are just scrolling and like bookmarking stuff for like, you know, their next party, then they're not going to read that right now. And so why gum up? I'd rather have them find my recipe and think, oh, I have all those ingredients, I'll bookmark it, versus, oh, I just scrolled for 5 minutes, I'm still not to the recipe, I'm going to the next one.
Interesting. I think one thing that I do as I'm culling out all the extraneous stuff that I had vomited out is I'll make each paragraph no more than like 2 or 3 sentences tops. And I'll like highlight the main thing about that sentence because people like to scan. At least I do.
Yes.
And in fact,
I like how you do that, actually. I need to be better at that.
It takes a long time. That's the only problem.
No, I know. That's why I don't do it.
But I actually can't read something that's not written like that. Like if I have to, if I see a huge paragraph and nothing's highlighted.
I know. You give up. You wave the white flag.
Yeah, I do. I do. I don't know if most people are like this. Probably not. But that's just.
No, I think most people are like that. Absolutely.
Oh, they
I think
are
it's
like
a good...
that.
I think people are skimmers.
Yeah.
Because have you ever, okay, this is where my creeper side's going to come out. Have you ever watched someone scroll through articles on their phone? Like if you're at a doctor's office or like you're sitting next to somebody somewhere?
No, but go on.
Well, then I'm done talking. If you ever watch somebody, I do this with my friends too. Like I'll watch them scroll through their phones. Like I don't care what they're reading or I don't, like that doesn't matter to me. I just want to see their behavior.
Okay.
Like, They're scrolling. They're not reading. No one reads that quickly. I know very few people that can read as fast as they're scrolling. And so they're like when you're highlighting those points and those sentences in your on your articles, like that matters.
I've never done any tests for it. It's just the way I like to read, which is the reason why I do it.
Yeah.
The other thing,
do you know what's so funny about that? I have to like tell this story because it's back from my early blogging days. So back. Like in 2009, I had a little mom blog group called SEO Mom Blog or something like that. And it was like 15 of us and we were all like trying to like share what we had learned about SEO. And someone had come out, I don't know if it was like Copy Blogger or one of those people, like one of the big people back in the, I don't know if they're still big or not, but had come out and said, you know, an SEO tip was to like bold some of your keywords, right? Mm-hmm. And in your content, which is kind of, it's like what you're doing now, but not all keywords. You're just doing it for readability, right?
Yep.
So one of my friends, Lynn, from Lynn's Kitchen Adventures, started bolding like keywords in her post and actually doing more of like what you're doing where it was, you know, calling out important bits of information through the paragraphs. And so she's a recipe blogger. And so she got an email from a reader like maybe a month after she started doing it. And they said, listen, I know you're trying to rank for all these keywords and you keep bolding them, but stop. It's super annoying or something like that. Like from just a standard reader.
Wow.
And I remember she sent it to the group. She's like, what do I do? And I was like, well, it's just one person. You know, like, I don't know. They sound like they're having a bad day. Don't worry about it. But I thought it was so funny. This lady like called her out for SEO. I'm like, this lady has to have a website
clearly,
or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's clearly another blogger. Most people don't even have that knowledge, right?
No, I know, but it was like the most random. And then whenever you brought that up in a lesson a couple weeks ago, that was the first thing that came to my mind, is like the Karen that emailed my friend. It was like, stop bolding your content. We know your tricks.
Well, the other thing I do that takes a lot of time is I'll find images for each section.
Yes, you do that.
But you just naturally have a lot of images, so you probably don't even need to do this step. But for me, I've otherwise would have no images whatsoever.
Yeah, so here's a trick that I do, and anybody can do this, is every time I'm out anywhere that's not my house, I take pictures of everything with my phone. Like a random chair, train tracks, a lighthouse. You know, yesterday I was out canoeing and I took a couple pictures of just like the landscape, lily pads, things like that. Because you just never know when you're going to need a photo. And to me, the more original the photos are, the better. Like, I think everybody kind of knows what a stock photo is at this point.
Yep.
And so I always try to use my own photos if I can. Now, it doesn't mean I don't rely on stock photos, because I absolutely do. But I just take, like, in your phone, everyone today has a phone that's good enough to take a high-quality photo that you can put on your website. And so I just, when I'm out and about, I take pictures of anything, like, random that I see that I think, oh, that's an interesting, you know.
But how do you work that into your post? Like, what does the lily pad picture have to do with cheese?
It doesn't, and I don't know when I'm going to use it, but I have it now.
But that implies you have, like, a nice system for, like, categorizing.
The problem is I don't have a nice system. I have a photo dump that I need to categorize. Actually, I'm probably going to put my VA on it, because she's actually categorized a lot of my photos so far.
I see.
But I just find that that's...
I mean, it's better for sure. But I think my problem would be if I took all these photos, I wouldn't be able to find them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the hard part, is that you have to be disciplined to like, okay, I took a bunch of photos and I upload them to Google Drive a lot. Like I'll just dump them into like, I'll take a folder and label it like trip to the park.
I see. So,
and then I have pictures of like an empty swing or something, you know, like that. And so I know that in like a park folder, I'm going to have a slide, a swing, you know, probably a bird. Something, who knows?
I think for you're more lifestyle. Like for me, it's more business stuff.
You need to go to an office building and just take pictures of people.
I just go to like Office Max and just start.
Yeah. just go to like go into a big city and just walk through an office park. Just snap pictures of people at their desk, on their phone, just real discreetly.
So I think based on our conversation today, a lot of people have a better idea of how we create content. I know for me, it takes me 4 to 6 hours to produce something.
Yeah.
And I have this process where I just literally lock myself in a room and I just have one light on. Like, you always make fun of me for this. And I just write.
Because I think that's so bad for your eyes.
I put on headphones and I listen to usually Erasure on Pandora, Erasure channel.
Okay.
And I just write
for
straight. What about you?
I don't listen to Erasure on Pandora. Sorry. I do like Erasure, though. So here's I didn't actually say this in the very beginning. So typically, because I spend so much time on Pinterest in general, if I see something that's trending, I will in my mind go, okay, I need to do this project. Like if I know that this, like, everyone's taking a dresser and turning it into like a bar. Something like that. Like, that was really popular like 4 or 5 years ago. Like, I did that on my own site because I'm like, that's super popular. That's trending. It's sort of like it's like you going on Ahrefs and going like, this topic's really popular.
Right.
I think I can capitalize on it.
Yep.
So that's, I start with that. So like the first part of it is a project. It's a recipe. It's, you know, not a case study, because I don't do case studies, but, you know, I'm going to compare the cost of like cloth diapers to using Pampers, right? So I have to get all the data. So that takes anywhere from, you know, 2 days for an easy project or a recipe to a couple weeks if it's something more drawn out, you know, especially if it doesn't turn out, because then I got to redo it. And then the writing part for me is only probably about an hour to dump all the writing in.
Right.
And then the longer part for me is the editing of the photos. And then sort of like, I spend much more time polishing everything than I ever do writing it.
Yeah. I think it just because of the nature of what we write about, right? Most of yours is image focused, hence you focus on Pinterest. Mine is more words focused. So it's Google and writing a long, comprehensive post.
But I would say no matter what you're writing about, it's exceptionally important to, I think the thing that we both do the same is we dump it all and then we go back and we start making edits and tweaks and make it better and better and better. And that part of the process is a part that I think a lot of people skip. They just go and write the post, add their photos, proof it 2 times and publish. And they end up with errors or things that they missed or things they could have said better or differently. And I think the important part is dumping it all out there and then waiting, coming back, revising it and making it the best piece of content that you can possibly make it based on clearing your head and coming back to it.
I think the single most important thing that you can do when creating content for your blog is to really read other people's blogs that are competing with you.
Yep.
Find the pieces that you like and imitate those pieces that you like. And for the pieces that you don't like, just don't do that. I know for me, I was heavily influenced by this guy named Steve Pavlina early on. And so I kind of emulated his writing style early on until I found my own style.
I want to know how many podcast episodes we've mentioned Steve
Pavlina. I know. I'm trying to give the guy props because he's what got me started. Although he started writing about weird stuff. So I don't really follow him anymore. But I mean, he's the one who got me started. So.
Well, and I think a lot of people, what I hear people say sometimes is, well, I don't want to go copy someone else. And I don't think you're ever copying someone else. I think it's okay to read things and be inspired and be motivated by what other people are doing. Because you're always going to have your own spin on it. You're always going to have your own take. You're always going to have your own opinions on what services and products that you like to use. And I'm always going to have my own take on, you know, recipes, projects, things that I like to do. But it's helpful to see what's out there because then you can craft your content in a way that you know the audience is going to read it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.